we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a tweet from Coventry Park Rangers, read by Diana Speed.
Today we're in Fenside, replacing some bridges with volunteers.
Our thanks to Paul Henderson for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and former aide to Theresa May, Katie Perrier. And opposite them, on my left, Danielle Ward and Phil Wang. Andy, what the hell is going on? Just what?
Next question. Can I kick off by just saying that I think it is extremely cruel of our politicians to inflict all of this on us in January, a month where a lot of people are trying not to drink booze. I think I want to get that out there. This whole psychodrama has now moved into the very complex, difficult area of dysmorphic self-image, because there are people, aren't there, who, when they look at themselves in the mirror, they don't see what the rest of the world sees. And clearly it's emerging that now Theresa May has become such a person. You know, when Theresa May looks in the mirror, what she sees is a prime minister. She self-identifies as a PM. But in theory, she is reaching out, isn't she, to everybody? Oh, that's not going to work. That's not her. She's not that kind of person. She likes to play her cards very close to her chest, sometimes even when she hasn't got cards. But I will say this for her. I've been observing politicians for over 40 years now, and she has got the highest humiliation threshold I've ever seen. No, seriously. I mean, whatever disaster befalls her, she just sits there and pretends that that didn't happen. So my guess is that in 2 weeks' time, she will come back with a slightly amended version of her deal. She'll probably change the font. But the most astonishing thing is that despite all this madness, some of the opinion polls actually have her 4 points ahead. So in theory, she could win an election, provided she doesn't campaign, obviously.
Phil, have you been enjoying this cavalcade?
Oh, no. Never before has so little been done in so many ways by such a large number of small people.
Katie, you've worked with Theresa May a lot. Can you think of worse weeks that she's had?
Well, there's so many times I've thought in the last year that she's done for, it's game over this week, and then she just bounces back. It's kind of the Duracell bunny. You just put new batteries in and keep on going.
So you're still on good terms?
Really good. Brilliant terms, Miles.
When did you last speak to her?
The day I resigned.
Danielle, have you enjoyed this week?
Well, I mean, no, but I really care about Brexit and also don't care about it at the same time. Like, I'm one of those people that if they interviewed, I'd just be like, yeah, get it over with. But I don't even want a general election anymore. Right now, I would happily take a benign dictatorship. And you know what? It doesn't even have to be benign, because at least Stalin made some decisions. That's sort of where I am.
Yeah.
I don't want someone to come in and do something.
That's the first time I've ever heard applause for Stalin on a Radio 4 comedy panel show.
Yeah. I think this is the sort of week where we're going to get letters about balance. At some point later, it doesn't have to be, and we don't have to name you, but if one of you could sort of clap a reference to Hitler or something, it just it just helps, not cheer loudly, it just helps the edit, do you know what I mean?
Do you know who I'd have? Lorraine Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about benign dictators up for the job, you know, Jeremy Corbyn runs his party like a dictator and it's about as benign as it comes. Particularly towards the Tories.
This is the news. Theresa May's Brexit deal was this week defeated by 230 votes, the largest defeat for a sitting government in history. A lot has been said about Theresa May this week, but I think we can all agree that she is still the people's princess. European news outlets have reacted with surprise at just how big Theresa May's defeat was. Typical Europeans always underestimating the British. Perhaps if you didn't all take naps after lunch, you might be able to destroy your governments too. 2 points to Andy. Katie, who's stocking their bunker in case we break up with Juncker?
Well, I know about this one. So according to research, one in six of us is now stockpiling food and medicines in the fear that we will crash out of the EU without a deal and all our supplies will dry up. Now, this same research said that men are 3 times more likely to stockpile than women. And I just think they just don't like shopping, so you might, if you're going to do it once, just get it over and done with.
Yeah.
Just don't buy it, I'm afraid. I mean, is anyone here stockpiling?
Yep.
Daniel?
No.
What are you stockpiling,
Daniel? I have a divan drawer in the bed of the spare room that has my Brexit food. It's basically it's all the things that I will eat, but don't like that much. own brand pesto and economy tea bags. And on my last shop, I bought 10 jars of Shipham's salmon paste. 10! There's 10 of them in there.
Are you telling me that Brexit is the only time I'm ever going to possibly go on a diet? What are you going to do with all the stuff when you found out to be unnecessary? All of this is totally unnecessary.
Well, I don't think... Right, so I don't think it will be unnecessary. I want to...
Listen, even the food banks are not going to want your stuff.
Have you got guns to protect your Shipman's paste?
You know what? When Brexit gets really bad, that gun is for me.
It's quite hard to stockpile casually. You know, it's quite hard to walk into a shop and say, have you got 1,000 tins of salmon paste? Because they're going to tweak. My mum used to work for the MOD, and during the Cold War in the 60s, they gave her a leaflet saying how MOD staff should prepare. She was expected to discreetly go out and buy a year's worth of tin food. Not easy to do. Oh, Mrs. Hamilton, who works at the MOD, she just bought a year's worth of tin food. Yeah, the other thing that she was expected to do was discreetly whitewash the windows.
I got to go down to the bunker. After you've worked there for about 6 months, they take you down to the bunker and say, this is where you're going to go with the Prime Minister if we set off the alarms. And if you're at home, this is the building you come to. Show this pass and you get in, kind of thing.
The bunker is under 10 Downing Street or under the House of Commons?
Under the MOD.
Oh, under the MOD, sorry.
But you can get to there from number 10 Downing Street, underground. And
that's worth knowing.
Yes. Well done, Katie.
Is there a code or anything like that we need to put in? Yeah.
And we had a little tour around, and this said, this is where you'd be sleeping, this is where you'd eat, you'd go work in shift work, that kind of thing. And then someone said, do you like the furniture? And I said, it's not something I've paid attention to. Yeah, it's all right. And they said, Mrs. Blair didn't like it, so we had to order it all new from John Lewis.
As uncertainty over Brexit grows, a new survey suggests one in six Britons have or are likely to start stockpiling food in preparation for no deal. Suddenly, that game of neighbourhood shag, marry, avoid you've been playing with your wife becomes less entertainment and more a strategy for repopulating your borough in a no-deal scenario. Apparently, men are more likely to stockpile than women, although that's less about organisation and more about finally being allowed to seize control of the weekly shop. Cry a little like Sharon, the fray bentos are going in the trolley. 2 points to Katie. Danielle, what's no longer the best a man can get?
So this will be about Gillette. Gillette has launched an ad that tackles toxic masculinity and a whole bunch of toxic males have got offended. I mean, obviously this means that it's been a really doubly bad week for Piers Morgan because first he can't go in Greggs because vegan sausage rolls cause him anaphylactic shock. Yeah. Right, that's what the fuss was about. And now he can't even use his favourite razor to shave his bum.
Ow.
Yeah.
I thought these companies were going to get on board with it now, and Gillette are going to sort out toxic masculinity. Apparently the toilet duck lot, they're getting on top of people trafficking.
Yeah, I heard that.
People are doing what they can.
Yeah.
I found it a little hard to be completely invested in this story. As an East Asian man, shaving has always been more of a spectator sport for me. I think I had to shave once in 2014. Starting to get that five-year shadow. I mean, I don't shave very much, but I've watched the Gillette video, and at the end, there's a website link given. It says, you can find out what we're doing at thebestmencanbe.org. So I typed in thebestmencanbe.org, and it's just the video again. And underneath, they just a little spiel that says that they have a new commitment to challenge what it means to be a man in the ads we run, the images we publish to social media, the words we choose, and so much more. Now, I don't know about you, but when I say "and so much more," I usually mean there is no more.
I just think that no wonder we can't sort out Brexit as a nation if we spend all of our time on Twitter arguing about this crap, quite frankly.
I mean, they've spent a lot of money on a campaign like this, and making people talk, I suppose, about another issue, and that's a good thing, that's an important thing, but I can't help feeling a lot of it from Gillette's point of view is they're just still trying to conceal the fact that shaving, a bit of a faff. This is the news. Gillette razors have sparked a backlash after complaints their woke new advert, which urges men to step up and call out bullying and harassment, emasculates men. This isn't the first time a company has jumped on the socio-political bandwagon. Who can forget when Opal Fruits were renamed Free the Birmingham Six? The new slogan, "The Best Men Can Be," replaces Gillette's old slogan, "The Best a Man Can Get," which replaced its even older slogan, "Silky Face Help You Do Sex with Lady." Two points to Danielle. Phil, who thinks the leek shall inherit the earth?
Yes, some food scientists over there have found that a plant-based diet will save millions of lives a year and protect the environment. I don't see why this story is any news. They're just saying vegetables are good for you. We all knew that. I think we're at the point now where Brexit has fermented our minds so much we've forgotten that vegetables are good for you and have to be reminded of it. I mean, one scientists have discovered that old people were born longer ago than young people. North Americans, apparently, need to eat 84% less red meat. So if Donald Trump organises another buffet, the world would just catch fire.
Where do you stand on vegetables, Danielle? Are you stockpiling them in your divan
bed? I've not been stockpiling vegetables. Or
a sort of linen chest thing, the vegetables?
I've been trying to eat less meat. I stopped eating the heads years ago. Like, I just have one very simple rule for what I will and won't eat, and I won't eat any mammal that I think, if it could talk, would hold a better conversation than Chris Grayling. And that's worked out for me.
I mean, it is all common sense, but the trouble is, you know, I've never heard a rational argument that can overcome the smell of bacon. That's the real problem.
Would that be a way to control sort of voting in the House of Commons or whatever? Do you think you could just sort of cook bacon in one of the corridors?
Voting lobbies.
Oh, well, yeah. It's me. That's absolutely fact today. That's because it's Andy Hamilton there. He's brought his big green egg and he's cooking bacon.
If you had this, like, so when I, because I was vegetarian, like properly vegetarian when I was younger, and guys would always say to me, "Oh, but bacon is so great, bacon's better than sex," and that would never make me go, "Oh, all right, I should then have some bacon." It'd make me go, "You're rubbish at sex."
Yeah, heed that, Andy.
are we talking streaky or
we're talking back, Andy?
Andy, have you never had a jar of homemade nut butter?
Hang on, I'm trying to remember.
Oh, I think you'd remember, Andy.
I don't think... Should I be stockpiling that? And you thought it was all going to be about Brexit.
The so-called planetary health diet, published by a scientist in The Lancet this week, recommends we double our consumption of nuts, fruit and vegetables to save the world. Livestock farming is a major driver of climate change, which is why I catch all my food in the wild, armed and naked, like my noble ancestors. Fresh from the grill of my neighbour Jeff's barbecue when he's nipped indoors to grab a Bex. The diet allows one beef burger and two servings of fish a week. Or do what I currently do. Chuck them in the NutriBullet and start your Monday with a bang. 2 points to Phil. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Katie have 4, but Danielle and Phil have 5. We start round two with an advertisement for a Buddhist retreat.
A week of meditation, ritual, discussion and reflection. Open to all gay men, both beginners and those with more experience.
Thanks to Simon Milton for sending us that. Andy,
what now? Yes, go on.
Andy, this year it's game, set and match for which tennis star?
Well, this is quite sad because Andy Murray's hip has decided, it seems, that it wants to retire, even if Andy Murray would rather go on. And I think it's rather sad. I think when he's, you know, if this is the end for him, when he's gone, we'll realise how underappreciated he was. There was always that faction, wasn't there, of people who would say things like, oh, he's very downbeat in his post-match interviews. And I think he's just spent 5 hours on court playing Djokovic over 5 sets. What did they expect? Half an hour of glittering repartee. I mean, it's a miracle he could talk, really. And I think the people who used to moan about him, I think they've forgotten just what British tennis used to be like. I was lucky enough to spend a day working with Andy Murray, and he was very gracious and extremely good company. I don't think I'd have had that experience with Buster Mottram. And in fact, it was interesting because we were doing an outnumbered sketch for Comic Relief, and there was a moment where in the sketch he had to be whacked on the shins by one of the kids with a tennis racket, and I was conscious that Wimbledon was coming up, so I said to him, look, don't worry, I said, I'll tell him to nearly hit you and then at the edit we'll make it look like he hit you. And he said, no, he can hit me with the racket as hard as he wants. He didn't hit him on the hip. I think it'll be... I think he was unlucky to have such a deep voice, because I think that automatically makes you sound a little bit flat and a bit, you know, I think...
Because if he'd sounded like Joe Pasquale, you'd have thought, well, what an ambassador. Yeah.
He's a laugh, you'd have thought, yeah. But he was very funny, actually.
And he kind of did that press conference where he said it was all over and he was in tears, and then he played that film All Made of all these other tennis stars saying, you know, Andy, you've been the best, you've been a hero, you've been an inspiration of mine, farewell, buddy. And he's saying at the same time, well, maybe it's not the end.
Yeah. It was suddenly sort of less a retirement, more of a redundancy, wasn't it?
The one thing I really miss about him, I mean, he's a fantastic tennis player, very exciting to watch, but I used to love, you know, when he won a big point and he used to do that roar and they used to slow-mo on him. And I think he's probably the only tennis player who could actually dislocate his own jaw. You know, it was extraordinary, wasn't it, that roar?
That was a result of an injury, the jaw. He got... he was attacked by a child, I think. Yeah, very sad. He won't talk about it because he's such a nice guy, but, yeah. Ultimately, not, you can't blame the child. It was presumably whoever was telling the child to do it. That's it. This is the news that British number one Andy Murray may have played his last ever tennis match. Once Murray's retirement is officially confirmed, all that's left will be for one of the ball boys to fling his racket into Wimbledon Park Lake, where it will sink beneath the surface until the country once again has need. Or maybe that's golf. It's something. 2 points to Andy. Katie, who tried to spark joy but sparked a controversy?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right then, let's go over a series of excruciating clues. Okay, what we're looking for, it's a news story. It involves someone who's sparked a controversy. A lady who's very good at tidying.
Oh, yes, she's mad. She's mad as a bag of rabbits, this woman. I'm telling you. Right. Her name's, I've seen her on the telly box. Her name's Marie Kondo. And she, well, it's abnormal, isn't it? I mean, she goes around people's houses and she tidies their houses up. And she goes into people's closets and says, oh, no, 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 no. And then she, you put out a drawer and she has these little boxes in drawers. I mean, who has boxes in drawers? Drawers are for dumping stuff in and then ramming it as hard as you possibly can before someone comes home and thinks you're as kind of minging as you really are. And well, her latest thing, her latest wheeze is that books are clutter. And that you should throw out books because once you've read them... Thank you, audience. I appreciate that because I think this is absolutely a disgrace. First of all, they are not clutter because in my house, they are proof that I can read. And if you went to the school that I went to, that is not always a given.
How many books will she let you have?
She will let... Does anyone know this?
30.
Just 30 max,
books.
Yeah.
30 max, yeah.
Well, I don't believe the outcry over the books thing. 30 books is plenty. I've never met anyone who's read more than 15. People always use opportunities to show off that they read books. I don't believe you for a second. You read Gone Girl 2 years ago. You're not bloody Matilda.
She has written a book.
And yeah.
About tidying up.
Is that the title? Tidying Up.
Yeah. But the TV programme's not... I couldn't watch it. It just isn't... The problem with it is it's not as entertaining as Kim and Aggie fishing poo out of someone's cooking.
I've missed this entire genre. There's a sort of poo fishing... Oh, is that what Robson Green's extreme fishing is? Perhaps they were just stockpiling poo in the event of... Tidying expert and author Marie Kondo has caused a furore by advising aspiring declutterers to throw out their old books. Before becoming world famous, Marie Kondo spent 5 years as an attendant at a Shinto shrine, but was sacked after she took their entire mini-disc collection to Oxfam. It's all well and good to tell people to get rid of your books, but when a community support officer finds you in the garden with a bonfire blazing all the Bibles you can find, suddenly not an easy situation to get out of. 2 points to Katie. Phil, have a listen to this.
This frog is staying with it. Like a tick sticks to a dog. I'm gonna win. You're gonna love this frog.
Phil, who's hopping for love?
Oh, Shakira, wasn't it? this is about a lonely frog. There's a lonely frog out there, a Sihenquas frog, I think that's the name of the species, an endangered frog called Romeo. He's been alone for 10 years. He's the only one of his kind, but now there's a potential that he might have been found a mate. So they've found more. And I've had a look at him, at Romeo, and to be honest, he deserves to be alone. He's gross. He's a disgusting, bumpy water frog. His handlers have made him an online dating profile with a bio that includes the phrase, not to start this off super heavy or anything, but I'm literally the last of my species, which is a line I also use on my dating profile, so. But in reference to voting Lib Dem. I think they can pull it back. Okay. Romeo spent 10 years in sexually frustrated isolation in an aquarium in Bolivia. He's the Julian Assange of the amphibian world. But now five other Sihenquas frogs have been found. They're found in a stream in a remote Bolivian forest. Three of them male, two female, and they were captured to bring back to Romeo. But how annoyed would you be if you were one of those three male frogs swimming around the Bolivian rainforest? Couple of lovely ladies. Already working with an unideal 3-2 ratio. They're being made to join some creepy old weirdo frog who hasn't left his house in a decade. He's probably a men's rights activist at this point. But, like, the team have so much invested in this guy, this frog. so much invested in this frog finding a mate. The expedition leader names her Teresa Badani, right? She's really optimistic about Romeo's chances. But I don't agree. I think he's a little slime ball. He's going to die alone, and I'm glad. But one of the new female frogs, who they're trying to get to buff him, they've... They've named her Juliet, I imagine against her will. And she is apparently, she has a very different personality. Quote, she's really energetic, she swims a lot, she eats a lot, and sometimes she tries to escape. Yeah, I bet she does. It's sick. It's sick, Miles, and I don't like it, but that's the world for you.
I also think if you're trying to save a species from extinction, don't call them Romeo and Juliet, because they both died young.
A frog believed to be the last of its kind in the world has been saved from extinction after scientists finally found him a possible mate. Biologists knew the species was in trouble, but did not expect Romeo to remain alone for so long, and have been giving him subtle hell for it every Christmas dinner for the last decade. Romeo's partner, Juliet, was found after an expedition to a remote Bolivian cloud forest, just as the bard foreshadowed all those years ago. 2 points to Phil. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Danielle.
Alison Arnold saw this in the London Wildlife Trust's Urban Urchins instruction sheet on how to care for hedgehogs in your garden. Put roughly 2 tablespoons of meaty pet food down, save the rest of the tin for another night, or give it to a neighbour to try.
Phil.
This is from Paul Farrow of Christchurch, New Zealand. This is on a sign outside a pet shop there. Labrador puppies for sale, $50. They will not last long at this price.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Katie have 8, but this week's winners are Danielle and Phil with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from a leaflet given to Ruth Scott of Oxford, outlining steps to recovery after her hip replacement surgery.
After 6 weeks, you can discuss having sex with your consultant.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Katie Perrier, Danielle Ward and Phil Wang. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by Madeleine Brettingham, Max Davis and Robin Morgan, with additional material by Catherine Brinkworth and Asilt Sears. The producer was Victoria Lloyd, and it was a BBC Studios production.